Blog Talk Radio.
It's your girl, Miss P, and you are now officially tuned in. I just want to thank you all for, you know, joining us tonight to get in tune with Stephen Van Payton and with International Rob B. Now, just to say a little bit about Stephen, you know, he's awesome. I really, really like him a lot. And, I mean, just as an individual, and I had a, you know, brief chance to talk to him, but I was just saving it all so we can all get to gain insight with him tonight. But just to say a little bit about him, you know, so you guys can know before I bring him on, is that he is a native of Brooklyn, which is rare because I'm meeting a lot of people that are so out of New York that it's not even funny, okay? Everyone's like, why don't you come over for dinner? Why don't you come over when you're in this neck of the woods? And I'm just like, yeah, really? Really? All right, I'm a New York girl, okay? So I'm pleased, very pleased to have Stephen on tonight because he is from New York as well. So that's a big, like, yay, okay? So after graduating from Long Island University, and he had a full tuition, and that's amazing in itself, he started a career in television production, and he was a production assistant, and later he assisted with lighting director for QVC. And from there, he went onto the big stage, and he managed a lot of TV shows and MTV Total Request Live, BET Tonight with Ed Gordon, and the list goes on and on and on. He also wrote two books, Volume 1 and Volume 2, of Brooke Waters' Curse. So I'm definitely anxious to gain more insight about all of that. And then just to say the least about him, well, not really the least, but the most, you know, in the sense that, you know, the list goes on and on and on about his talents and his skills. He also likes comedy, and I like to laugh. So I definitely want to hear something. So we're going to put Steve on the spot tonight and see what he comes up with. I mean, because it don't take much to make me laugh, Steve, just to let you know. So just say pineapples and I'm going to crack up. So anyway, without further ado, guys, let's tune in. Hey, how you doing tonight, Steve?
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, just rambling over here, rambling.
Okay.
How you doing? I'm so excited to have you on tonight. So I just want
to
say thank you.
I'm grateful to be here. Thank you.
You know, so I'm sitting here and I'm trying to figure out what do I even start with him. I mean, it's just amazing. First of all, I want to just say that, you know, I know that this was a while ago, but, you know, I still just want to give you my love for that, receiving that tuition and, you know, that scholarship and everything like that, because that is so huge to me, especially being an African-American male.
Right.
Being
an African-American male with no basketball skills, that's that in itself. Yeah, I guess that is, yeah, when you look at it like that, it's like, you can't even ball? Like, no. Like, oh.
Right, exactly. It's like most of the time when they're giving out these scholarships is basically, like you said, have something sports related. So it's definitely, like, awesome to see that, you know, there are some times where people do step out of that criteria and, you know, actually give it to someone who's deserving and not just in sports. So, you know, hats off to them for that one. So let's just, you know, for everybody who's getting in tune with you for the first time, and I myself as well, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself, like, you know, early childhood and stuff of that nature, where you're originally from, and, you know, fill us in.
Well, let's see. Well, like you said, like you brought up, I was raised in Fort Greene, and that was when Fort Greene wasn't exactly the nice place that it is now. I mean, it was always cool, but you know what I mean. It's, you know, the neighborhood wasn't always as, shall we say, friendly as it is now, or, you know, just diverse, let's say. But yeah, I managed to navigate my way through all of that. And, you know, what can I tell you? I went to Brooklyn Tech. I went to Long Island University. I kind of kept it in the neighborhood, you know, and I won the scholarships. I won the scholarship to a college that was right where I was growing up. And, you know, it kind of made sense to, you know, not bankrupt my mother and just kind of, you know, keep it in the, you know, I could have, you know, probably tried to go to Howard or one of those other places. But, you know, I had a single mom that I'm dealing with. So, you know, I got to try to be practical about stuff. So overall, I had a great college experience or whatever. And then after that, I started working in television. And but I, while I was in television, I ended up kind of becoming more the logistical dude, which is how I ended up kind of becoming the stage manager and doing all of that kind of thing. So my creative side never really got to be fully realized. So what I ended up doing is just saying, you know what, I got to try to do my own little thing here. And I've always been a horror movie fan. I was kind of a latchkey kid, kind of left my own, you know, just go watch TV and study and do your thing, you know, while my mother was, you know, tied up with work and trying to do what, you know, do what she needed to do. So I always ended up, you know, watching these horror movies, and there was always some stuff that I liked about the horror movies, but one thing I didn't like was how people of color were treated within horror movies, and, you know what I mean by that, basically dead before the credits. You know, if there's any kind of character development, then it's very superficial. It's very stereotypical. You know, as long as we've, you know, been on this earth and had Hollywood and everything else like that, I think I can still count on one hand how many times there's been a strong, non-stereotypical black male lead in a horror movie. And, you know, in listening to that, I still have to look at old school stuff like Blackula and things like that, along with Blade and all that stuff. So that's what kind of compelled me to sit down and start writing Brookwater's Curse, which is basically about an 1860s Georgia plantation slave who ends up becoming a vampire. And then he also becomes vampire law enforcement. He ends up being trained by vampire samurais for a time because he's at the time that he gets brought across, it's still sort of a Jim Crow-ish in America, and, you know, and his mentors realize that, you know, he's going to end up just kind of like messing people up if he continues to be here. So they let him ship out for a little bit. So he's training with the vampire samurais. He gets it, and basically it's just a nice, diverse plethora of adventures in various places like Japan and Senegal, and I really kind of spread it out, and it's, you know, it's a very multicultural cast, and that's basically it. I got two books under my belt. The third one is coming out this year, and that on top of, you know, me also doing my thing in television and also with the other many projects that I'm involved in. That's kind of it in a nutshell.
Right.
So I got a lot going on, basically.
Right, you do have a lot going on, and I commend all of that, you know. Do you ever get, you know, feel, like, overwhelmed, you know? Because I know for myself, like, I feel like I'm multi-talented or creative, I should say, not talented, because if you tell me to sing or dance, I can't do either one. So let me retract on that. But as far as being creative, so as far as being like creative, that I can say that I am, you know, bountiful in that area. So do you ever feel like overwhelmed for, you know, because you're so creative and you have so many different outlets that you can utilize that you feel like, okay, I could do this and do that. Do you ever get burned out, though?
I get, you know what, to be honest with you, there are times when I start to feel like that a little bit, and then when that happens, that's kind of when I sort of pull back a little bit. I go back and, you know, I'm always doing something, but basically, since writing is such a therapeutic thing for me, if I just go home for like 24 hours and don't really talk to anybody too much and kind of keep the Facebook shenanigans to a minimum, you know, I can kind of regroup, recharge my batteries, so to speak, and, you know, I can kind of, when I start feeling a little crazy or whatever, or even a little grumpy, you know, I just go back in my neutral corner and I, you know, replenish myself a little bit, and then I come back out and I come back swinging.
Right. So, before you started writing, I know that you said that, you know, of course you was a horror fan. I am a big horror fan myself. Love it, love it, love it. Even the corny ones I would sit down and watch, you know, because these days everything is so, like, animated and stuff anyway. So it's kind of taking me back to that whole cartoon state. But anywho, are there any writers that you, you know, you gravitate to before you started writing?
Well, you know, the crazy thing was my mother was a big reader, and she always had books around the house and that kind of a thing. And naturally, so when she started reading Stephen King, I started picking up that stuff. She always had James Baldwin laying around, and I kind of picked up that stuff. I discovered Walter Mosley along the way. I discovered Anne Rice along the way. I was reading Anne Rice before I was in junior high school. So, you know, it was there. I let myself be open to it. And even though, you know, you could, like, some people will hear that and be like, Anne Rice, he wasn't even, you know, he's like 10. But are you crazy? It's like, and obviously what's going to happen is, as a 10-year-old, I'm going to read it, and there's certain stuff I'm going to understand, and then there's certain stuff that's not going to hit me until I'm like 17, 18, 25, 20, you know, whatever. And then
right.
be like, oh, that's what that was, you know.
Right. Like,
that's
kind of
how
meant.
It is. And I'm not saying that that's a good idea for every child, because, I mean, you know, when I'm doing book signings, a lot of times people, because of the nature of what I'm doing and how I set up the table with the, you know, with the bats and all the other stuff that I do up my table, you know, I get a lot of little kids coming over, and it's like, oh, no, I'm not having your parents come look at me up on Facebook and yelling at me, son. You need to go talk to my man over there with the comic books, man. You can't hang over here. I'm sorry. Come back in about 10 years, son. Yeah, I got sex and violence, man. You don't want none of this. I'm not trying to traumatize nobody.
Oh, my goodness, that's too cute.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's only natural, you know, a child see a bat, you know, that's going to pique their interest. But it's so cute that they do, like, gravitate over there, though. Like, hey, what's that? So
what's
the hardest part of writing?
The hardest part is making time. Especially if you have other endeavors, if you have family expectations, you've got all kinds of... I mean, everybody who has sat down and written something either has, like, no family or, you know, nothing like that, or you have a very understanding support system. And I'm, you know, I'm being dead serious. It's like... Because, I mean, I've gone through, in the course of creating Brookwater's Curse, I've come in and out of a couple of relationships and things like that. And, you know, it's like you need people in the house that understand, you know, understand that, you know, it's like you're going to stay up some nights and just be up writing while, you know, just, you know, maybe this person wants to watch a movie or whatever. And it's like, no, baby, I got to get this chapter in, or, you know, you get out of bed. It's like, where are you going? Well, I'm going, all right. You know, it's like, oh, you know, it's like it can put a strain on a relationship if your significant other does not understand, does not get with it, and just for whatever reason. You know, so that's the thing. Like, every writer I know either has somebody in their life that feels really neglected or, you know, has somebody that's just, like, super supportive.
Right. Absolutely. So, did you learn anything from writing your books along the way?
Oh, geez.
I mean, anything new?
Well, you mean new in terms of the writing business, or just new in terms of the world in general?
I know, right? It's broad, right? That was a broad state question, right? Like, Miss P, get it together, generalize, right? So basically what I mean by that is that, you know, once you come up with the concepts and your ideas, you know, and they're flowing and you're just trying to, like, kind of put them all into pieces, like, I'm going to put this here, I want to start here, I want to do this, I want to do that. So along with all of that happening and you constructing this book, you have to do some research, right? So with
the research
and you're already, you know, your concept, you know, what have you learned, you know, in putting this book together or these two novels together that you, you know, that was something different from you that you wasn't aware of prior?
I'll hit you with some random stuff that's hitting me just as you're asking. One thing I learned, don't go to Africa by yourself.
Why is that, though?
Well, see, here's the thing. I was in the middle of writing Volume 1, and it was one of those nights, and mind you, this is when I was hardcore at MTV, at Total Request Live. My day would generally be get up in the morning, go do some MTV stuff in the morning, then in the afternoon we do Total Request Live, then we do MTV News, then I go somewhere and have some alcohol, then I go home and try to write something, and then I would probably be up until damn near sunrise and then get up and do it all over again. That was literally the routine for, you know, a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Thing was, I'm up one of these nights and I'm working and I'm typing and I come up with this whole, like, thing with this evil werewolf prince that's kidnapping this little girl, and now all the characters have to go to Senegal. And at first I'm all satisfied with myself as I go, because it's like sunrise. I'm barely going to get enough sleep to then get up, go do whatever I do. And I remember just as I'm about to doze off, a little voice goes off in my head and says, hey, silly man, you've never been to Africa. How are you supposed to finish this book? And I just remember saying to myself, damn it, that's right. And then I'm thinking about it, and I'm telling my friends about it. And my friends are like, dude, what's the matter with you, man? Just go to Jamaica. What's the problem? Make a Jamaican werewolf prince. And I'm like, no, but that doesn't sound right. And so I'm back and forth and back and forth. And now I got to figure out, all right, Africa. Okay. What part of Africa? Then I figured out Senegal, because it's, you know, fairly easy to get to, as opposed to, like, Nigeria or something like that. And then on top of that, I'm like, all right, so how am I getting there? So then I end up with this, I come up with this cockamamie scheme of tagging along with a bunch of drumming and dancing students. So I meet a whole bunch of people I don't even know at the airport. And then, you know, we fly to Senegal together. It's like a straight shot, 8-hour flight on some bootleg airline that I'm sure does not exist anymore. And we get there. And African dudes are all like, so Steve, do you drum or do you dance? And I'm like, well, you know, it's funny you should ask. Because I kind of don't do either. Oops. I'm actually just kind of here to sightsee and take pictures. And, you know, and I didn't want to come out and say, yes, you know, I'm writing a vampire novel. Because, you know, you don't know how people are going to react to that, especially when you don't have, You know, Volume 1 was actually like a weird time for me, because, you know, there were people you would tell and there were people you wouldn't tell, you know,
right.
Just because you don't know how people are going to react to that. You know, I could be in a bar trying to, like, talk to a nice lady. Yes, and I do this, I do that, and I'm writing a vampire novel. And she's like, check, please. And, you know, it's so you're always gauging your conversation with that. So there I am in the middle of Senegal. I don't know anybody, and I'm on this thing, and then slowly but surely I'm getting involved in people's lives. People are taking my hair pomade, and all kinds of crazy stuff is going on, and I'm there for 2 weeks. And then the worst part was I get back home and find out that my malaria medication, because where I was, I had to take malaria medication,
mm-hmm.
or else
mm-hmm.
you know, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you now. So I'm on this medication, and I'm driving around with the young lady that I was seeing at the time, and this news report comes out talking about some Army dudes who were on the same stuff I'm taking, and they're killing themselves. And it was funny because I heard that, and I was like, wow, no wonder I feel like shit. And it all just kind of like... So that's why, you know, it was a great trip. It definitely, the book would not be the same without me having taken the trip. But that was a trying experience, without a doubt. So that would definitely be one thing that I would say, you know, if at all possible, travel with people and be conscious of the medication you need to take. So,
absolutely.
That's two things.
Jeez. For real. So what is your writing routine? Like, do you have, like, a particular, you know, like, regimen that you follow?
You know, I try to maintain a certain discipline, absolutely. It starts with an outline, and then the outline will just kind of, it'll be in the room at all times, but certainly, you know, once I actually sit down and start actually hammering out the story, sometimes, like, you'll have the plot points together, but you don't always necessarily know how you're going to get from point A to point B to point C, and then later on down the road not have point K conflict with something you did in order to get to D, if that makes any sense. I know I'm kind of talking crazy, but you know what I mean? It's like you kind of have to, especially when you're doing something like what I'm doing with, like, a supernatural world, and you're establishing these rules, and, you know, vampires do this, werewolves do that, shapeshifters do this, and all that stuff. And then you have to constantly check yourself, because what'll happen sometimes is you'll start to do something that is convenient, but then completely contradicts something you said earlier. And truth of the matter is, it's like now that I already, you know, I was really running into that a lot when I was writing what's going to be the third book, because now I have like a whole 700 between the first two books, it's like 700 pages worth of stuff that I have to respect along with what I'm trying to do right now. You know what I mean? So it's like what I'm doing now, it can't conflict. Not only can I conflict with something that I wrote an hour ago, I got to worry about stuff I wrote back in 2008. So,
right.
You know, it's a long double-checking process.
I can only imagine. If I could get past, like, a paragraph in writing ever in life, then, yeah, I could relate. But because I can't. I'm just kidding. I can get past a paragraph, Steve. I can.
I'm sure you could if you
I could probably
really
get to two.
Wanted to.
I could probably get to two before I have writer's block. No.
And that happens too.
I'm serious. Like, it's just, you know, it comes and goes. It's like, if you're not, like, really in that position, and it's always, like, those, for me anyway, it always, like, those spur of a moments of creativity always come when you're doing something awkward.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, I'm going to remember this. And by the time you go to write it down, it's like, how did I say this? Oh, what did I want to do? And, you know, it's just, like, it's a blur. I know for me anyway. I don't know about
right.
for you. How is it for you? What happens when you get those spurs of inspiration or these creative ideas? What do you do?
Well, you know, the thing is, I just hope I'm always hoping that when that happens, I'm actually home alone and in front of the computer, because it really doesn't do me any good to do that while I'm, like, working a Justin Bieber concert and I'm looking at 500 screaming 15-year-old girls and all kinds of other craziness. Because then I have to put that on the back burner, you know, try to real quick, like, make a note, oh, that's a good point, and then make a note, and then I got a director screaming in my headset, Steve, I need him over there. Oh, Jesus Christ. So that's kind of what I'm, you know, that's kind of my own personal variation on how it gets done. But, you know, it's like, just like, you know, it's like it's not something you can control. And I do what I can to control it. I always try to be in front of a computer or at least have a pen in my hand. I have some way of doing something. You know, I try to allot at least a certain amount of time for that. But, the greatest idea in the world could hit me at a time where I am completely incapable of doing anything about it. And you just got to roll with it. You just got to, just try to tuck it away somewhere in the back of your mind. And then later on, when you can do something about it, just pray to God that you actually remember it as crisp and clean and as wonderful as it originally, as the original epiphany came to you.
Right. So are there any, like minor or major perks of, being a writer? Because, some people, as far as, if I may go a little off the topic of the book now, but still around the book,
mm-hmm.
Like you said, you go out and you hang out and have your little drinks or whatever, and you meet a lady, friend, or whatever, whoever, random person, and, you tell her you're a writer, but that could intrigue some women because some women are attracted to creative people, just like some women are attracted to men that can cook, that are chefs and stuff like that. So everyone has their thing that they're into. So what are some of the perks, you realize, along the way of writing, that you noticed? Is it does it spark most women and they're like, oh my God, how does that all
work? No, there's not a lot of, oh my God, until they actually read my stuff. I'm not going to be in the shadow talking about, hey, Brooke Waters Curtis, and pointing at myself, and some woman's going to be like, oh my God. No, that's not quite how it works. I'm not Usher. You know what I'm saying?
It doesn't matter.
It really doesn't matter.
I'm not just gonna walk in the place. I don't need bodyguards.
Well,
why not though? Come on, you're still celeb to me. You know how I feel about that. You're still celeb to me. That's how I feel about it.
Well,
we all are.
I appreciate that. That's really, really sweet. But let's be serious.
that's not what's happening. Okay, Miss P.
It's not. It's really not. Believe me, if it was, I'd be calling you from the shadow right now. I'd be like, I can't hear you, P. You gotta speak up. They playing that Sean Paul shit. I couldn't even do it. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. So it has to be some type of perks with it, though, that you notice. Some it may not, get, everybody's attention because, some people may be lame because I feel like a woman that or individual that can't respect something that's creative, and diverse,
mm-hmm.
then there's something really wrong. And there's no pun against anyone out there. But I'm just saying that's just something that should just kind of draw you to an individual to want to learn more. Oh, really? You're a writer. So what do you write and what do you do? And,
You gotta also remember that we also, as a people, and I love my people, but we tend to kind of fall into certain zones. Now, a lot of times I'll go to a book signing, and big surprise, I'm the only quote supernatural guy, and everybody else is either on one side of the room. And they're doing the urban lit stuff, or they're on the other side of the room and they're doing the Christian lit. And the thing is, I get love and understanding from many of my fellow authors, but at the same time, the urban lit cats will run at me like, "Yo, son, I feel you about this vampire stuff, son, but it ain't about the streets, son. You know it's about the streets." And I'm like, right, yeah, the streets, right, gotcha. Streets, yes, gotcha, yes. And then the Christian lit folks, they love me as a person, but then they look at the table and the bats and the blood and all this other stuff, and they're like, Steve, love you, but you need Jesus. You need Jesus.
But
you haven't even read the book. You don't even understand. There's actually some really cool good versus evil, really interesting ties in with religion in my stuff. And no, Steve, you need these.
And I'm like, all right, you know, I can't. There was one signing I did. They put me right next to a Christian lit dude who's a friend of mine, a guy by the name of Robert Self. And he's at my table. I mean, he's at one table. I'm at the other table. His stuff, and like I said, he's a Christian lit dude. So it's literally like heaven and hell with, like, tables, like, next to each other, like recruitment tables. So his table's got all this, like, white stuff and baby blue stuff, because he's there with his wife. And it's all pretty and lovely and this and that. And then you got me with the black and red and fangs and this and that and bats. And it's so funny because the Christian lit people, they would come over and they'd say, well, hello, Robert. And they'd talk to him and all this other stuff. And he does spoken word, too. So he's trying to move the CDs and he's trying to play the CDs. And then he realizes, oh, he doesn't have headphones. So now he has to come over to Satan's table to get headphones. And, of course, me being me, I have skull candy headphones. So I get up, and the scared Christian lit people are like, oh, my God. It's like, what? What?
Okay.
It's like, I'm not a gargoyle. I'm like, what? I hand over the headphones, and they're looking at me like, and I'm like, dude, I don't want your firstborn. It's fine. It's okay. Exactly. I don't want your soul. You know, it's like I'm just loaning you a pair of headphones. It's all good.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be surprised. But, you know, so perks, yes, I'm sure. You know what? Yes, there'll be the occasional woman that will read something and be like, yes. Check, please. Hello, Mr. Van Patten. How are you? And we'll talk or whatever. It usually doesn't lead to anything. It's a very, how can I put this? It's a very fluid thing. And it's not really something that I go out of my way to exploit, especially since the main focus of all of this is to actually get the work done and not just be out.
Being
a jerk.
Right, but I wouldn't say being a jerk, so stop it. It's not about being a jerk. It's about, hey, I'm in a bar having a good time, and when you're out and you're mingling with the public, then you meet the public or stay home by yourself. That's my idea of it all. Like, if I'm going to go out, then I want to talk to people. You know, like, if I want to just be by myself, then I'll just stay home. You know, that's
right.
The whole general idea of, you know, being out. It's not being a jerk. It's just, hey, I'm out, and I'm having a good time, and that's just it.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Daggett, like, don't make me go to bat for you now. Like, I'll fight some, what? Oh, okay. I'll throw somebody.
No, it's not even, I mean, and the thing is, it's like most of my going out basically consists of just a quick after-work drink with coworkers and things like that. I'm not really, I mean, I'm joking around about the shadow and stuff like that, but that's not even really my scene. And I wouldn't be able to hold down all the stage managing stuff and jump around from show to show and everything else like that. And the thing is, like, I still do MTV stuff every so often, but they're not even shooting like they used to be. So since I still need money, I actually work more for Fuse now than anybody else, and I also stage manage the Jeremy Kyle show, which is actually starting back up in a couple of weeks. But, those are more of my main stays now. But the thing is, like, those are hard, long days, and I don't have a whole lot of time to be sitting around profiling in some, you know, place.
Like,
I'm giddy, you know. I wish I did have that kind of time. It's like between that and trying to write these books, and then what random stuff my friends have, and then the other radio show that I'm a part of where we sit around and review movies, and of course we get drunk during that, but the point is, my time's limited, really limited. If I'm, you know, and that's how it's got to be, because I got to be on point, and I got to treat stuff like it's serious. So I have my fun, but I still have to stay focused.
Absolutely, and I commend that. So, you know, you send me your press kit and everything like that, and I want to make sure that I, you know, just ask you, like, who did your logos and stuff? Like, everything is so, like, on point. I was like, look at this. And you know what's so funny? The folder with the press kit in it, I actually, like, put it up in my wall on my wall in the office so I could just keep looking at it. So since I received it, I've just been looking at it, and I'm like, this is so nice, like hot and creative, you know. And then I'm like, who? Yeah. So did you design that? Did you design the covers of your books also?
Well, the covers of my books were actually, I specified what I wanted, but they were actually drawn, illustrated, I should say, by a gentleman by the name of Jim Scheer, who is actually the host of VH1's Top 20 Countdown as of now. I knew him through MTV. He used to host a lot of stuff on MTV, too. And he's a bit of an artist. He's also a musician, and he's nice enough to help me out with those two covers. The logo that everybody really likes, that's kind of a funny story. That was actually originally designed by my best friend, guy Ron Abiquin, who I grew up with. He's like a brother to me. He did the original design. He's a civil engineer, so he kind of just did it on CAD. But then I have another friend who took the logo, and he's like a graphic. He's a big graphic artist for Showtime. He does like the he'll do the graphics and layouts for the publicity campaign for Dexter and Weeds and all that Showtime stuff. And, you know, he's a drinking buddy. So he said, no, let me clean this up and let me mess with this for a minute. So he cleaned up the logo and made it what it is now, just in terms of its sharpness and all of that stuff. And then, of course, because I love it so much, I eventually, of course, had it tattooed on my right shoulder, which you'll
awesome.
See if you tour through my Facebook photos.
Awesome, because I'm making mental note of that, because I'm definitely going to be on that, looking for that tattoo, because I mean, it's serious, though. It's really serious. I love it, love it, love it. So he did an awesome job. So much love to him for
yes.
his assistant in that. So, you know, tell us, I mean, if you weren't writing or doing the lighting and doing all this creative stuff that you do, is there anything else that you, you know, would venture into doing?
You know, I don't know. It's hard to say. Because, I mean, honestly, I was the kid that, like, if I needed to do, like, if the homework assignment was, like, a 5-page paper, I'd have an 8-page paper or something crazy like that. And
mm-hmm.
the teacher would be looking at me like, really, Steve? Really? Really? You're making me work this hard? Really? I'm kind of tired of you, Steve. And it's, like, about the ninth time you've done this. And school just started. It's October, Steve. What's your problem? You know? You know, it's like I was always like that. It's like, you know, math and science, all that stuff was fun. It was interesting, but to actually just put words on a page, I was always sick with that. And I mean, even with the fact that, because I mean, I kind of when I got into TV, I kind of had the vision of becoming a writer for television. And when that didn't pan out and it became one of those things where it's like, well, this isn't going to work, but you can still become a respected stage manager and you can do this work and that kind of a thing. You know, at some point you got to make a decision just in terms of, you know, all right, well, you know, I do got student loans to pay. So, you know, it's not, you know, mess around.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, life pulls you in the direction that it pulls you sometimes. But, you know, the thing is that this is always something that I wanted to do. And, you know, it's like it would be happening regardless. You know, I mean, as much as I would like to say, oh, well, you know, maybe I'd have explored something, something else. You know, it's like I know what's in my heart. And, I mean, I toyed, you know, as a youngin', I toyed with all kinds of stuff. I played bass guitar. I did all kinds of crazy stuff. But this is what my heart speaks to. So, I don't really
right.
see myself going in another way.
Right. Do you find that some of yourself is in these books as far as, like, do you identify with any of the characters in this book?
I think everybody who comes up with this kind of elaborate kind of thing, definitely, I think we all do that. I mean, a lot of my friends, they'll read the books and they say that they can literally hear my voice while they're reading. A lot of people say that most of Christian Brookwater's sarcasm in particular is basically just like having, you know, me in their house talking to them. So absolutely, I would say Christian Brookwater is definitely, to just to make an analogy, Christian Brookwater is to me what Darth Vader is to George Lucas, is what Kermit the Frog is to Jim Henson, if you know what I'm saying.
I definitely get it. I do. So tell me, you know, what has the reception been, you know, for, you know, when you first released part one, and how, and then how was the reception when you released part two? Like, how was it overall?
The reception, well, you know, it's like, look, I'm independently published. I have limited resources. I can tell you right now that if not for the benefit of things like Facebook, I definitely would have never had a leg to stand on, really, having gone the route that I've gone. I was lucky. I have been lucky in the sense that a few book clubs, ARC in particular, the ladies of ARC, big shout out to them. They have, once they found me, they have been supremely supportive of what I've been doing. And they even went so far as to include me in a cookbook, which was deep, because it's like okay, so I'm going to do a chapter for a cookbook, and I'm going to do it in Christian's voice, but he's a vampire. So I already know, because I already fend off naysayers day and night, so I already know what the first thing somebody's going to say is, he's a vampire. What are you talking about? He's in a cookbook? So... But I, you know, they were cool with it. I was cool with it. I was like, I'll write it, no problem. And I, you know, I had some recipes in the holster, you know. And I, and the other thing was, there was a fairly dark time in my life where looked like the TV thing may have fallen apart, may have gotten ready to fall apart completely. In truth, I was panicking, so I ended up taking a bartending class. And, of course, I mean, honestly, I was already, you know, working again before the bar, before I could even finish the bartending class. You know, I had, like, Spike sending me off to New Orleans and Fuse picked me back up and that kind of thing. But because TV is the other thing, TV is a very tumultuous business. So a lot of people have other little side things and stuff like that. But yeah, I took a bartending class, so I kind of learned a little mixology and a little thing like that, you know. And so I incorporated that, and the other thing was I had this recipe that I had worked on, and that I was supposed to be on a reality show and all this other business. That was basically what I did. I just took all that stuff that I had laying around and wrote a chapter, and there it was. And it's actually a really cool book because it's me, and it's about 18 or 19 or 20. Loxie's in the chat room. She knows the exact number. But it's a whole bunch of us. We're all very unsung, for the most part, unsung great writers, at least that's what I believe of my fellow writers in the book. Everybody's got a chapter. Everybody's talking in their name. 19. Thank you, Loxie.
And, I was waiting to. You should have seen me. I'm sitting there looking at the screen, listening to you. Like, okay, Loxie, come on.
Every chapter is so much fun, and all the recipes and all the drink recipes. You could sit and make all this stuff and just be fed and drunk and happy. And it's a fun little book. Everybody should pick it up. I've been giving them away and. Christmas, I'll probably, you know, 35 recipes, exactly. And, yeah, and I'm just, you know, giving them away to friends, and that's going to be like my big stocking stuffer slash, you bought me a Christmas gift, but here you go. Have a, you know, official literary recipe book, you know, that's going to, because
right.
I always keep, like, little emergency stuff on standby in case, you know, I get a Christmas
somebody's
gift.
Somebody's birthday or something.
Exactly. So, you know, you got to be prepared. Always be prepared.
Yeah, definitely have.
So I always keep a bunch of those laying around. for that. You know, it was a big honor to be a part of it, actually.
No,
it was,
definitely.
Real sweet of them.
That's
to,
so awesome.
Real sweet of them to include me, and you know, and it's funny because then when I do the radio show with my other group of friends, and then I make the Vampire's Kiss drink that they're kind of talking about in the chat room now, and it's a real easy, simple drink to make, but it's also very tasty. And it's basically vodka and whatchamacallit. Oh my God, I can't remember my own drink recipe. It's and I'm looking at the bottle. That's really really sad. That tells you. Chambord, yes. I had to pick the bottle up and read it.
Chambord
vodka,
okay.
And a splash of cranberry juice. The cranberry juice is actually very important because if you don't use the cranberry juice, it will taste like Robitussin. No BS.
So Chambord,
yeah. Well, I mean,
vodka,
and Robitussin
and cranberry?
Is fine. You know, if you know you're into that kind of thing, but
if you're sick. If you're Chris Rock, then it's fine. Because remember his little joke about Robitussin. Every time he heard himself,
right.
His mom would call Robitussin.
Got a broken leg. Tussin. Bring out the Tussin. Yeah, I remember that.
Definitely. So,
but
okay.
If you're trying to be all sophisticated with it, yeah, you don't really. You want to remember the cranberry juice.
Okay, so let me just run this by you again. So you said vodka, Chambord, and cranberry.
Mm-hmm. Equal parts vodka, Chambord, splash of cranberry.
Mm. And you know, I really don't like Chambord, but I'm gonna try that because you know I used to bartend.
I think you
can
treat
so.
Yourself.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to see how. Yeah, definitely. You know, since everyone's suggesting it. And what's up with this blood orange chicken that Lotsie's talking about as well?
Well, that was the dish. That was the dish that I basically put in the old chapter there. I figured I should have at least one food dish. So that was it. And I had, you know, I had some help with that. And I do cook. So that's the good thing. I know how to throw down and make a little marinade, you know, get a marinade going and then get the grill. I'm pretty good. The thing is, of course, I also like to eat at restaurants a lot because it's just the time, you know, time thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Lord, it's like I'm also a messy cook. That's the other problem. It's like,
that's the other problem.
I'll cook, and then I'll look back at the kitchen, and I'm like, damn, how did I do? Because I guess what it is, I know what to do, but I'm not very disciplined with it. So it's like, I'm the guy that I'm cooking something, and then I'm cooking something else, and then I keep grabbing different clean utensils. That's where I screw up. I keep grabbing different clean utensils, and so... You know, about midway through it, you know, I'll have used like about 10 forks, 4 spoons, you know, all these knives and stuff. Everything's laying around. Everything's got some kind of sauce on it. And I'm like, how did this happen? Damn it. And you know, I'm just crazy with it.
No, but that's so funny and cute at the same time. I love it. It's really cute and lovely. I love it, love it, love it. So, Steve, tell us, you know, what words of wisdom would you leave with an inspiring writer?
Oh, wow. Aspiring words of wisdom. Let's see. I would say, first and foremost, you have to believe in yourself. And that can sometimes be and I will admit, when I was writing the first book and no one had seen paragraph one or anything else like that, and it's just going on night after night after night. And, you know, you're kind of sitting there, and, you know, and everybody else is out, you know, having a good time. People call you up, oh, man, when are you coming to this, and when are you coming to that, and this one's got a birthday, and, you know, and you're kind of just blowing stuff off because you're trying, you're believing in this, and you're getting this done, and you're doing all that other stuff. It's, you know, it's hard. You start to really question your freaking sanity. You're like, why am I doing this? But if you really want this, or if you want anything, it all starts with belief. It all starts with belief. And it also starts with the willingness to put in the work. And it also starts with, you know, figure out, and this is actually kind of a big thing. People who have big goals need to figure out who their friends are. really, really, really important to know who your support team is. And, you know, because there's all different kinds of friends, but sometimes you have a friend that's really only good at the bar. And after that, you kind of need to leave that friend there. But then you have other friends, you know, and they're the ones that help you move, show, you know, come pick you up if you had an accident, you know, take you to the hospital, you know, stuff like that. You know, it, and you got to figure that out. You got, especially if you're the type of person that's weighing yourself out, working crazy hours and everything else like that. It's very important. Very important to just kind of be a good judge of character and just kind of keep life as drama-free as you can so you can focus on what's important.
Absolutely. So when can we expect to, you know, read into your book, I should say, instead of see more, but read your book? And can you share a little bit about it? Yeah, is it a volume three?
It's a continuation of Kristen's odyssey, so to speak. And to be honest with you, it's going to involve some serious changes. Kristen's been kind of, in the first two books, Kristen's kind of a loner with a, as they're talking about small circles in the chat room, he's kind of had a small circle, a strong circle, but a small one. It just kind of grew during the second book. Now it's getting to the point where he's being pushed into a more of a role of leadership. And with that comes people that are trying to tear him down for their own agendas. I'll tell you this right now, on purpose, I do make some parallels when it comes to a black leader who is being assailed, so to speak, by people who have their own hidden agendas and machinations in place. And yes, there are some vague parallels to what our wonderful president is going through now. And that's a lot of it. The other thing I do, because I'm always being confronted with, you know, well, what's the difference between your boy and Blade, you know? And there are a million differences between Kristen Brookwater and Blade. But by the end of the third book, I can guarantee that I will have effectively killed that noise once and for all. And to know what I am exactly getting at, you're just going to have to read it.
Right. Definitely. So where can people, you know, find you to, you know, gain more insight and, you know, stay in tune to all of the new things that you have going on and, you know, buy the books?
Well, buying the books, of course, you can go to Amazon. They're on Kindle. They're on Nook. They're going to be on iBooks as soon as I can figure that out. I'm at www.workwaterscurse.com, of course. I have a Facebook page. You can either run my name, Stephen Van Patten, or Laughing Black Vampire, and you'll find me. I'm real, real easy to find. And that's it.
Yay. So I just want to thank you so much for, you know, just being amazing, being very well-spoken and just sharing all your awesomeness with us. I mean, bartending, cooking, writing, you know, TV. I mean, come on. The list goes on and on, and it's just also awesome to me. So, you know, they need to start doing clones of you. They need to start cloning you, seriously. Make someone else play a copy or something.
You know, those horror movies, you know what they do with the original once they make the clones. I'm just saying.
You know that
like,
is
hey,
true,
Steve, now that we have Steve, you know, now that we have SVP 2 through 100, we were thinking maybe we were gonna put you in a little rocket ship and maybe, you know, just kind of like have you orbit the Earth for the rest of your life. I'm like, what? So.
Oh my God. So thank you so much, Steve, for everything. And please keep us in tune to any and everything. We're always here. We're family. And I just want to stay connected from this point on, if that's cool with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. You will, I will definitely be attached to your Twitter hip, so to speak.
Yay. I love it.
So, yes, no doubt. And I really appreciate you having me.
Thank you so much for letting me have you.
Well, hey, now, we're still talking about the same thing. All right.
Love it. Well, thank you.
All right, now.
Have a good night.
You too. Thank you so much.
You're welcome so much. Bye.
All right, now. Bye-bye.
Yeah, guys. So that was Steven. So make sure you guys, you know, gain insight on him ASAP as far as, like, his website. Follow him on Twitter, find him on Facebook. Just basically, you can just throw his name in the Google, and everything that you want to know about him will pop up. And everyone who tuned in to listen to him tonight, I really appreciate you guys taking the time to, you know, tune into the Intune Show. And I definitely hope it's not your last time tuning into the show, because we have a lot of awesome topics. We have a lot of great interviews, a lot of good music, and we're just surrounded by a bunch of love and support. So I just hope that you guys, you know, gain by just tuning in when you can. And if you cannot tune in at the time of the live tapings, all the shows are on archive linked on this link. So you definitely can stay in tune that way at your leisure. So coming up next, we have International Rob B. And I'm totally excited to get to talk to him tonight because he's a little cutie pie. And I like talking to cutie pies, you know, who don't like talking to cutie pies? But before we have him on or whatever, I thought it would be just an awesome thing to get in tune to one of his songs. And this one is called So Gone. So let's check it out. And for all those who want to call in and give Rob a call, it's 818-495-6975. And that's live with Rob B. and Miss P. So check it out. So Gone.
The way your body move when you whine and drop it low. Got me in a trance, I don't wanna let you go. I know I gotta leave, but I wanna take you home. Your body like that good, and it got me in the zone. Got my mind so gone, mind so gone. It's breezy in the building, these ones I'm concealing. Oh yeah, come get it, baby. In the mood for spending, I hold up, who is that? Oh no, in the back, I'm trying to see you dance. Can I get that chance? Here's where I get in trouble. It's like I'm spending double, I can't do just one. Here go more ones, liquor in the system. Oh yeah, it's kicking in.
You got bills, I don't do this, but this proof that I'm foolish, can you blame me?
By International Rob B. And just a little bit about International Rob B, because he will be, you know, filling us in a second, so I don't want to give too much away. You know, I like what he put in his bio, where he says, everyone has a story to tell and a different way of telling it. People draw, write books, blogs, do hear. Me, I tell my story through music. And I think that that was like, wow, to me, you know. And it may be like something to someone else, like something that's really little and oh, whatever, but it just takes a person to think outside of the box, okay, and not really, you know, stagnate themselves in that sense to really get the gist of what he's saying. So shout out to Rob B for that one. That one was awesome. So without further ado, let's get him on the line and gain some insight on him. How you doing tonight, International Rob B?
I'm good. How you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for taking the time to get us in tune tonight.
No, it's a pleasure. Yeah, thank you for having me on the show, and I look forward to a great interview.
Yes, and I look forward to a great interview, too, and I look forward to some laughs because I'm silly and I like to laugh, so I hope you're ready for me.
No, that's a beautiful thing. Everybody has to laugh.
Definitely. So for all our listeners who are just getting in tune to your style, your music, and your name, you know, how would you describe yourself in 5 words?
You said 5 words?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I would say smooth, driven, intelligent. I would also probably have to say suave, if I may.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And just the last word I would probably have to say would probably be I'm just motivated.
Absolutely. And those are all good. Yeah, 5 words. They're all good things. Those are all wonderful things, actually. I mean, because who doesn't want suave, you know, intellectual and all that good stuff, you know, all balled up in one. So those are those are all good things. So tell us about how you initially got started with music. I mean, you don't have to take us, like, way back, you know, because, you know, we don't have to go that far, because mostly everybody grew up with music, you know, immersed in music from their parents and or exactly. In church or whatever the case may be. But when did you decide to take those, that whole, like, the notion of music into play?
Well, I'll probably have to say college, which was about, I would say, I started in 04. So, yeah, about 7-8 years ago, I would probably say, maybe even 6. I've been doing, you know, music for a little while, you know, growing up, as you probably know. But actually going to college, that was more or less my test. It's like I've been doing all the homework and studying, and then when I got to college, it would be my test, because they actually had a big stage where they would actually have, like, the Black Eyed Peas and big-time performers perform, so I figured, you know, me coming from Florida all the way up to the Midwest, Minneapolis, Minnesota, that would be a great opportunity for me to really kind of test, you know, my music and my genre. And if it can sell here, it can sell anywhere, because they have a whole different perspective when it comes to hip-hop music. So what I did was I was part of the football team, and I spent my entire camp, we had a two-week camp before school started, actually rehearsing and playing football at the same time. So what I wanted to do after our first game was I really wanted to have an opportunity to kind of showcase some talent, to really kind of see, you know, what kind of response I'd get. And I actually got a great response. I performed in front of like 100 of my football guys. And then my next show, which was a couple of months later, it word got out, and actually about 3,000 people were there. And I did a live performance, and right at that moment, that's when I knew that this was something that I definitely wanted to continue doing if I could.
Absolutely. That's awesome. So everybody was like, yay, go Robbie, you know, like, you know.
Well, but, back then, I was the younger out of my class, so they called me Young Rob at the time. So.
Yeah, Young Rob. Like, yeah, Young Rob, you know, like, that has to be, like, an amazing thing, though, you know, because anyone can relate to the fact of, like, school, whether it's, like, college, middle school, whatever, of people, mm-hmm. like, being, like, kind of jealous or envious or hating or whatever words you guys can resonate with. You know, it's not always easy in school, you know, because it's always, like, someone wants you to be the oddball for some reason, you know. So it's kind of
exactly.
awesome when you could just, you know, come up on the scene and be like, look what I could do, you know.
No,
and
exactly.
then they're just
exactly.
like, whoa, blown away by that. So that's awesome.
Well, the crazy part about it was because I did know that I would at least get some love from my football guys. I mean, they were really, really good guys. But when I was in the green room actually, you know, preparing for the show, I didn't even know how many people were there. I said, you know what, I wasn't going to worry about it. So I was actually in the green room for like an hour before the show. When I came out and I saw all the people that were there, my heart dropped, and I was like, wow, like, it was surreal. So that was definitely a moment that I never forget.
Right, absolutely. So, you know, that's something that you will always remember, just like when, you know, I remember I was on a swim team, and, you know, I may not have to put this out here, but, you know, why not? I was on a swim team, and, you know, for some particular reason, you know, when you're on a swim team, they usually have you in, like, a whole entire bathing suit. And when I say that, I mean like a full piece bathing suit
exactly.
type thing. You know, I don't know what possessed them for this particular like contest and race we were in or whatever. Like, we had to wear like little like two piece bathing suits, you know.
Wow.
And yeah, this is what's happening. Okay, Rob, this is what's happening. So, you know, I jump into the pool after, you know, my teammate gets to the corner of the pool, and I jump in, and by the time I swim and I come back, I have no top on, you know. So yeah, that was my memorable moment,
man.
And everybody that was there was like, yeah, you know. So yeah, I had to stand up, you know. Like, you know, I had people, like, you know, giving me the thumbs up too, Rob, you know, performing, you know.
Oh, yeah?
It was like a performance. It was like a performance, yes, you know. It was like it was a setup. I felt like I was front and center, you know. That was crazy. But, yeah.
Front and center,
so
right.
That's the look. You see, it's still burning in my soul, right? You see, it's still
like,
killing
what
me.
What was they really cheering for?
It was because I could swim well. It was because I could
oh,
swim
yeah?
well.
Michael
no.
Phelps? All right.
So tell me, you know, how do you choose, like, you know, what tracks make the cut or not? Because, you know, I know from experience just having brothers that are in, you know, producers and stuff of that nature, like, they're always writing and they're constantly, like, making beats and stuff like that. But how do you decide which ones qualify to be put into the universe?
Man, that is a really, really good question. I mean, I battle back and forth. You know, us as artists, you know, you probably heard this, a lot of people who, let's just say they finally get a breakthrough and they have a hit single, a lot of their songs have been out for like a year, 2-3 years. So as artists, we always want to make a good record and then move on. So, you know, it's challenging. It's challenging to really kind of get a record and really give it the proper love and the proper promotion and marketing that you really need to get, you know, for that record so you can actually, you know, create a buzz and move forward. A lot of the times you put out a song and you move too quickly before you can really, you know, get all the buzz that you can out of it. You know, me, I work extensively with my producer, and he's so hard on me, you know, it's funny. Because I think, oh, man, this song sounds good. And he'd be like, nope, no, we still got to tweak it. Or how about this song and that song? You know, as artists, sometimes we don't have control. You know, we're biased. And what our favorite song may be may not be what the people like. You know, a lot of those songs, a lot of your favorite songs don't make the cut. So when it comes down to it, you know, I just have my close-knit circle. And, you know, we really, really brainstorm and really see what song realistically is going to, you know, make the proper impact. And so that's pretty much our process, and that's how it's been pretty much the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. So tell me, like, you know, besides music, you know, are there any other things in your life, you know, outside of family and things of that nature? Because, you know, that's common for people to just jump in and say, oh, yeah, I love my family. Yeah, we know this, okay? But what are you passionate? Do you have anything else that you're passionate about?
Well, it's so funny. And I guess unless you're really kind of close to me or you've worked with me before, I actually got my degree in cartoon animation and studio arts. You know, a lot of people, when they hear studio, they do assume that it may be just with music, but it was both genres when I was in school. Plus with the cartoon animation, I actually draw, do animation and things of that nature. So that's always been a passion. A lot of people, you know, they draw, you know, when they're younger, and then they kind of eventually grow out of the hobby. But for me, it just was something that I just felt really passionate about, and it was something that I can just always do for some reason. And I ended up going to school for it. And my dream is also with music at the forefront is to open up my own animation company. So that is something that I'm very passionate about and I love to do.
Wow, you would never, ever have, you know, it's not like never. You can really look at somebody and be like, yeah, she eats the spaghetti, she doesn't eat pork, you know, it's not like
exactly.
You would really be able to tell, but it's just like, I wouldn't have thought that, you know, because most people, I've interviewed a ton of people and I've never, ever heard anyone say, yeah, animation, drawing, you know, books, reading, writing, you know, stuff like that, you know, it's mainly just music. All I'm passionate about, Ms. P, is music. I just want to make music.
Yeah, I mean, in the perfect world, I mean, that's what we do. I mean, and so it is. I mean, that is my passion. I mean, what we all get out of certain things are different. You know, what I mean by that is, you know, for me, I love writing music and stuff. But I think something that really, really gets me going is the performance. You know, the feeding off of other people and things of that nature, or the process of writing, and just to think, I was jumping rope when I wrote that song, and now look what type of song it is, you know, for example. You know, because for me, I did 4 years of theater in college, too. Not a lot of people know that. Unless they're around me, they know how I act. I'm kind of goofy as well. So they're like, oh, you'll be a good actor or something. So I actually did a lot of acting, too. So those, when you perform in acting and things of that nature, I mean, that feeling is just something that you want more and more. That's your high.
Mhm. So, are you working on any collaborations with any other artists?
As of right now, I'm actually working with a very talented artist. His name is Ben Bascom. He actually presented a song for me with him on the hook. If you guys want to check him out, he's on SoundCloud at I think it's just Ben Bascom. You can check that out. But he's a really talented R&B artist, and he's doing a lot of things within his movement himself, real humble guy. And that's who I'm working with right now, particularly for my next single. And then there's a lot of other people that I really want to kind of work with, but it's more of a timing issue with everyone else, just you know, making sure, because I'm not one who just, you give me a song, I'll do it. I like to really collaborate to really make something special, so.
Mm-hmm. So do you think music, you know, is a joy most for the beat or for the words, in your opinion?
Oh, man, that's another great question. I guess different songs do different things for different people. You know, and some songs, you know, you can say, oh, man, I really, really like the beat. It puts you in the zone. And there's other songs that you're like, I really like what he's saying. I really like the words. So I would have to say 50-50, just because different songs do different things for you. You know, ultimately, nowadays, people don't really listen to the lyrics anymore, so it is beat. It is the beat. But for me, it's 50-50. I mean, I want to enjoy both when I listen to music.
I'll take that. I'll take that because, you know, because it's true, because it depends on my mood. If it depends on my mood, if, you know, I might just not want to listen today. I just want to dance, you know, and I can't dance, so I just do what I can do. And then some days I just don't want to dance, and I just want to sit down and kind of, like, absorb the lyrics.
The melodic type feel, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Everybody do one day. You know, and then Tupac, you know, Hail Mary one another day, and then you listen Pumping Your Fist the other day. So, yeah, I know what you mean.
Right, exactly. Sometimes I think I'm Missy Elliott in here dancing off a hot boy, you know. Yeah.
With the
barber's bag?
Can...
Can I stand a Ray video with the big shades and everything going
classic.
Off on the sides?
Don't let nobody see you, though. They might call the people. They may get that check every week.
Okay, but then I don't know if you know that she had a you make tears come to my eyes. The plastic bag. All right, pull it together, Miss P, okay? Okay. Okay, stop it. No.
I got a couple of jokes.
Okay, that was a good one. Okay, Phoenix asked, can you please ask him what's his craziest moment, you know, when it comes to fans? You know, do you have any, like, unrealistic moments, you know, that you're like, OMG, what's happening right now?
Funny story real quick.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, I guess more in person, but growing up, I've been called everyone has compared me to somebody. I've been Allen Iverson, I've been Trey Songz, Bobby Valentino, and I'm not exaggerating. These are just things that people say I look like. Brandon Jennings, who's a basketball player, and somebody yesterday I was playing basketball, they said, oh, you know, you look like Allen Iverson. I was like, oh, yeah, heard that before. But funny thing was, I was actually in college, and it was probably my sophomore year. I was coming home. I was going to Atlanta to do a show because I did a lot of that back and forth. And I was actually at Landed, and I was in the airport, and I was just walking, and I noticed when I got off the plane, you know, I wanted to go get something to eat, I said, man, there's a couple of people kind of looking at me kind of strange. And, you know, Atlanta's airport, if you ever been to Atlanta's airport, it's pretty loud there.
It's pretty big.
And it's big too at the same time. So I'm walking down, see a couple of people looking at me. And, you know, I didn't pay it no mind. I had my headphones on, so I really couldn't hear any noise or anything like that. So I probably go like 100 yards, and I start to kind of like a stampede type deal. But I'm not paying it no mind. I got my headphones on, but I kind of feel the floor kind of rumbling. I look around, and I'm not even going to lie to you, there's about 50 girls running after me. And they're running towards me, and I'm like, and I ain't paid them mind. I was like, oh, there must be a star. There's always stars in the Atlanta airport, and they're kind of just more and more kind of looking towards me. So they're about, I don't know, I would say, 10 yards away, and they start tugging on me, and I'm like, I'm just in shock. I'm like, what's going on? And they're like, Omarion. And I'm
no
like,
way.
What? Omar?
Oh, no,
I'm not a mark. And the girl's like, oh my God. And people taking pictures, and I'm sitting there trying to run, get away from them. And then finally, they were like, no, that's not him. I'm like, oh man, this is nuts. I had to tell my mom, and I was just like, man, this is crazy. So this is what it feels like.
All right.
Yeah, it was a crazy situation.
No, you know what's so funny about that? Because you don't look like Omarion to me. Do you feel like you do resemble him? I mean, the complexion, everything. Like,
man,
it's totally off.
This was like, let me mind you, I had braids too back in the day. So this was like six years ago. And so I don't know, maybe I look younger. I have no clue.
Right. Like, I don't know. I think they all need glasses. But it's okay. You know, keep on running up to him and supporting his music. It's okay. It's okay, you know. And those are the times that, you know, you just need to have, like, a duffel bag full of, like, you know, giveaways. Like, here, check out my CD. Check, you
know. I know, right?
That'd
have been a free promotion,
yeah,
for sure.
Right. Well, you know, going forward, what you have to do, you just have to keep a little fanny pack. Full up, fill it up to the top.
Be fanny pack around the waist too.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I'm having fun. Sorry. I really
That's
am.
Good. That's really
I know
good.
It's hard to pick like one of your songs because they're all good, but which one do you like to perform the most?
Oh man. You know I like to perform the most. I would probably have to say They Don't Know. That's definitely one of my favorite songs. The first time I ever performed that song, you know, I've done a lot of performances where, you know, I've had my close people with me, but the majority of the people I've done a lot of showcases to where it's been just a whole array of people supporting other artists. And we all know sometimes we're in the local scene, you know, and everyone's not friendly. You know, they always want to be hard and they want to just support their guy. And then, you know, even if the music sounds good, you know, they won't show them no support. But a surreal moment happened, and I was actually performing the song for the first time. So I was a little anxious to see how people would, you know, adjust to it. And I was performing the song, and about halfway through it, you know, everybody was actually singing the hook. I mean, it was a humbling situation. And, you know, whenever you're performing and, you know, the crowd can really relate and sing your song, I mean, that's probably one of the best moments that of an artist that you can have, because that just sort of lets you know that they actually are feeling, you know, the feeling of the song, and they're one with your performance. So I'd probably say that one.
Okay, awesome. So, you know, we all, like, I don't know about you, but I know we have to, because I don't think I know any person who ever told me no to this question. But let's see.
Oh, gosh.
Okay, what is your favorite song to belt out, like, in the shower? Because, you know, I be going off on Anita Baker. Do you have any songs that you just, like, get in the shower and you just, you know, just be going off in here?
You know, and, you know, when you do get in the shower, you feel like, you know, you are
you
a recording
symphony.
Artist.
Symphony.
You know, you like, okay, I'm ready. Everything ready. All right, let's go. And then you just start singing. I mean, everybody knows me as a singing person. I just sing. You know, I always said if I sound like Music Soul Child, then I'd probably be an R&B artist for sure, all the way. But I'd probably say for a while I was singing Tony Thompson. He was, and I'm going back, Tony Thompson, he was the lead singer from High Five.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who that? You know what High Five is?
Yes, I do. Okay,
oh, okay
I
okay.
like the way you kiss me.
Okay,
don't start. No, I think
but
I'm in the shower already.
I know, right? I think he came out with an album. He had one album that was when he was signed for a short time with Bad Boy. I sing a lot of his songs, or I sing Life Jennings. You know, those are probably my favorite ones to sing.
Mm-hmm.
In and out.
Right, because you know what's so crazy about it, like you said, you know, you get in a shower, you and I don't know, and I mean anybody can relate to this, okay? You get in the shower, you pull back the shower curtain, and all of a sudden you're in the booth. You're just in the booth.
It's the reverb. It's the reverb for sure. I mean, you get in there, it's the proper echo. You know, check, 1-1. And you good. And you good.
Exactly. You know, so I'm glad that, you know, International Robbie agrees with Miss P. So everybody who's in the chat room acting like they don't know. Because I'm expecting people to be in the chat room like, yeah, and I'm saying, you know, and no one's saying nothing. Everybody's keeping that on the down low. Okay, that's cool. Anywho, you know, what message are you trying to convey, like, ultimately, you know, to your supporters and your fans, your groupies, quote unquote, you know, what are you trying to convey?
Well, that's the key to success. You know, that's the reason why a lot of people, you know, they got that break deal, because a lot of people, their message, whatever they're trying to convey, as you say, you know, they've done it. They're successful, you know, and we always want to make sure that we're not being too broad with what we want to convey as well. But for me, I mean, it's just self-empowerment. I mean, that's what my movement stands for. You know, any individual that is willing to conquer its goals and adversities and say, I did it. You know, not to say that there was no help that was needed, but just the initial push to actually push towards that goal or to conquer that adversity and give people the perception that you know that I'm going to do the best that I can with anything that I do and I'm not going to be denied. You know,
wow.
I think that that any person is very strong within itself because a lot of people, you know, they give up. You know, it's a lot of adversities. You know, there's a lot of reasons for people to quit and not want to do it. And, you know, I can definitely relate because, there's always times where you're like, you know, am I just spinning my wheels? You know, is somebody going to, you know, recognize me, give me a chance? And, you know, on those darkest days is the time where you actually got to really push the most. And, you know, that's what I want to represent. You know, I just want to represent and let people know that, you know, all your dreams can come true, you know, if you're trying to catch them.
Absolutely. And that's so inspiring. You know, it really is. And what I like the most about, like, getting in tune with you tonight, Robbie, is the fact that you're very well-spoken, you're very intellectual, and, you know, it's not like one of those type of individuals, and it's not, this is no pun intended towards anyone, but you know how some people, like, take their education for granted, you know, it's like you hang out with certain people and you start to kind of like immerse in what they do. So that kind of like starts to take precedence over what you know from right and wrong. So anyone can, you know, talk down and have fun with your people as you, they, you know, as it's said or whatever, but it's a time and a place for everything. But for the most part, like if that's really, you know, right from wrong, then you're going to speak differently. You want people to see you for the education that you put in and all the work and hard times that you was sitting over your books and studying wasn't to be like talking like, you know, well, yo, son, you know what I mean? Like I cannot...
Because even T.I. can't be a thug all the time.
I'm telling you, there has to be some type of like line drawn at some point, in my opinion. You know,
it's just
sad because, you know, at least you know that when you talk to International Rob B, you're going to get a full head-on conversation. You know, I didn't have to sit here and have my dictionary and try to Google plus what you were saying in the interim of you still explaining something, like, what is he talking about? You know, but, yeah, it's definitely clear, and I see you doing your thing from here on out because it's just, like, this is what we need in this, you know,
thank
business
you.
As far as music is concerned. We need more people like yourself that's able to, you know, convey and articulate the way that you do so it can show people that, you know, the youth – or younger generations of, you know, artists coming up that, you know, maybe I don't need to behave this way or maybe I don't need to speak this way, you know, take note from Rob B, you know. So this, you know, I'm loving it. I'm definitely into
thank
it.
You. Thank you. I mean, you know, a lot of people, just to kind of respond off of that, you know, a lot of people, we want to be cool. And, you know, we don't never want our cool points to be out the window. So we feel like if we act a certain way, or we speak a certain way that, you know, it's cool, you know. But nowadays, and how people are really becoming successful is how they do. You know, don't be afraid to be different. You know, as Lil Wayne has says on that commercial, you know, the Mountain Dew one, you know, don't do as other people do, do as you do. You know, that's what makes us unique. That's what, if a lot of artists understand that, it really makes us different. You know, and people want different. They want to buy. They'll buy into it. So, you know.
Right. It's deep. It's really deep. And, you know, and I just kind of feel like, you know, not to take it to school or nothing like that on, you know, real quick, but it's just very important and people need to understand and engage in that importance of people sacrifice their lives for our education, for us to have rights to do the things that we're doing today. So it's an awesome feeling to be able to talk to someone that don't take that for granted.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank so if you, what would a good theme song for your life be and why?
Oh, man. You didn't tell me that question was going to, no, I'm playing.
Like you didn't pre-warn me about that one. You know, you left that one out.
You know, I mean, whew,
Well, you can pass. You know, you can pass.
No,
you
I'm
can
not
get
passing.
Back.
No,
I'm just
I'm not
messing
passing.
With you. Like, nah. It's a game short. Like, I pass, pass, next.
I know, right? Nah, I need that money. I mean, there's really only a couple of songs that I always think about, no matter what. And, you know, I'm a lover, not a fighter, you know, and I'm a strong believer in support, you know, having somebody's back, having someone's back and they having your back. So I would probably have to say Life Jennings Must Be Nice, because that song really kind of has a lot of meanings. You know, obviously the obvious reason would be the girl and the guy and the girl. You know, it must be nice to have that person that's there for you. But I also feel like, you know, metaphorically speaking, it could be used like that in music as well. You know, you be the artist and, you know, you have that support system, you know, with you, you know, whether it be management, promoters, you know, marketers, et cetera. You know, it is really nice to have those people that are there for you, you know, genuinely, you know, but if all of it's gone, then you'd be miserable, you know, as well. Mm-hmm. So you really have to, you can't really take for granted those who are there to support you, because once your supporters are gone, you don't really have nothing. So I would probably say that one.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Absolutely. So if you were interviewing you, what would you ask you, and how would you answer it?
What would I ask me?
Yeah, what would you ask, you know, if you were doing an interview in? Because I know this is not your first interview, and it becomes, like, kind of repetitive, some of the things that people, you know, address you with. So if you were the person interviewing you, what would you ask yourself, and how would you respond to that?
Hey, you hit me with the nice questions.
What would I ask myself? This is an
Intune
show. No.
See, that's great. I mean, see, I'm kind of having – I have a little trouble just because I don't even really like to – I'm humble. I'm a humble person. I don't even really like to boast about myself. So it's a little challenging when you ask me that. But if I had to, you know, I would say, you know, that would be the obvious, actually. You'd probably ask me that a little later.
Okay.
I would probably say, wow. I don't even know, really.
Okay, well, we could pass on that one. But don't think that when I follow up with you somewhere down the line, you better have that one ready for me, because I'm going to be waiting. I'm going to put a little note after this interview that he did not answer this question with a red pen. You know how, like, when you were in school? That's that's
no,
happening.
No, I'm going to come back. I'm going to make sure I come back to it right within this interview. Let me think about
okay.
that.
Okay. Okay, no problem. Not a problem. So tell me, you know, what turns you on? What turns you on? Your creative juices. What turns you on spiritually and emotionally?
Anybody that's really doing something positive, somebody that has a great story, that has a nice, you know, feel good story, a nice message. That always motivates me. You know, I would say emotionally, I would say whenever I go to, like, a concert and I see people live, I'm a big advocate of seeing artists live, like artists that I do admire. You know, being there live, it is so different. And it always gets my juices flowing, you know, whenever they're there just talking and getting that feedback and doing – you know, what they want to do and doing what they love and really having fun with it. I mean, that's something that really gets my spirits up, and it just reminds me, you know, more and more that this is something that I really, really want to do, because that feeling that they create for you is something that I want to create for others. You know, that when you know, that moment when all the lights go off and the DJ is making you scream that person's name, and then they come out and, you know, your stomach drops and you're like, he or she is here. And it's the look on their face like, I have arrived. I mean, that's something that really motivates me and turns me on for sure.
Definitely. So what has been, like, the highest and the lowest point of, you know, this journey in music? Because you've been doing it for a while now. And, of course, like anything in life, there's just ups and there's downs. So
exactly.
You don't have to be too deep with it or be too personal with it. But, you know, what has been something that was, like, up there and then something that just kind of, like, flatlined?
That's a great question as well. I mean, a high for me, and I kind of split it in half. A high for me was when I performed back in college in front of, you know, those 3,000 people that I didn't even know I would be performing in front of. I thought that, you know, that was certainly a high. Another high would be people that I've met. You know, people like, and I think he's listening, Ron Fernandez, and I would say Maggie Love, which I call a Tay. You know, when you run into people like that who are willing to, you know, help you out any way that they can, and they see in you what you want everyone else to see, you know, whenever you can run into people that believe in what you want to do, I think it's a high within itself, because at the end of the day, that's what makes you successful. You know, that one or two people who are willing to take their chance, willing to invest their time and invest their money, I think that's very, very important with being successful, because not only does it motivate you, you know, on top of your self-motivation, but it creates a moment for you that you really can't put any type of amount of money on. A low for me has been working with some people who have promised me the world, and not necessarily following through with that. You know, me growing up, I had to really humble myself and really put things into perspective, because you know, in this world, and in this industry, it can be cruel, and you know, there's a lot of broken promises, and you know, I've learned not to get too high and not to get too low with things, you know, that people say, just because, you know, I don't want to set myself up to be heartbroken, and I've definitely felt that and encountered that a couple of times with some people who will promise me the world and say I'd be on BET the next day, and yeah, I was on my couch. So, you know, I would probably say that to answer that question.
Right. So, how do you respond to negative feedback from your music?
You know, I always, you know, not everyone is gonna like your music. That's understood. You know, everyone has different tastes. But I always try to, you know, I'm a stubborn person, and I know that not everyone's going to like my music, but I always try to make them see the positive in it. You know, okay, you don't like the music. You may not like the beat or anything like that, but look, this is what the song's about. You know, and I go back and forth with my producer, J.O. Cotto. Shout out to him, by the way. Because he'll be like, and he's blunt. He's probably one of my biggest critics. And I'll write something, and you know, we'll collaborate on something. Then I'll come back to the studio, and you know, I'll show him what I got. And he goes, I don't like it. This cold, I don't like it. What are you trying to capture? What are you trying to do this? What are you trying to do that? And it kind of like it slaps you in the face, because you know you've been practicing. You probably, you know, wrote it. Probably thought this was probably one of your best lyrics that you wrote, and he'll hit you hard. And you know, it's not that he's being totally negative. He's just, you know, trying to make you really kind of see the whole picture and really have you grab the audience, you know, and really exhaust, you know, all of the talent that you really have, you know. And so, you know, with that being said, excuse me, you know, that just makes you want to, you know, really want to work so much, much harder, so.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, you know, I just enjoy, like, talking to you. I mean, I have a few more questions. I know it's late, but I just want to get them all in. You know, so what if there was, like, another genre of music that someone just threw you in, which one would you hope it would be, like, outside of what your norm is?
Say that one more time.
Like, if someone just took you and threw you into another genre of music, you mm-hmm. know, and it's, like, out of your element, kind of, sort of. Which one would you hope it would be?
I would probably, I'd probably want to do, I guess you would call it what, like techno music, I guess you could say, something like party rock, just because they have fun, you know, and, you know, at the end of the day, you want to have fun. If they had to throw me in any other genre, I would definitely want to be on that one.
Yeah.
Just because you could dance a little bit.
Yeah, that's true, too. You know, you might want to think about that one. Because techno music in most clubs in New York is, like, the joint, like, everywhere you go.
Mm-hmm.
So,
exactly.
You know, you'd be like, okay, you go into a club and they say it's R&B night, and then you get there, it's techno, and everybody's, like, jumping off walls and seats and chairs and busting bottles over their head. And I'm just like, whoa, I wasn't ready.
Mosh pitting, diving, all that good stuff.
Okay, it's like a Blade movie, you know, when he goes into the vampires and they just going off in there, like, whoa, I wasn't ready. No
that
one
must
warned
be
me.
Exactly.
So, what genre of music can't you stand to listen to? Like, is it anything that you're against?
Man, I try to be open to everything. It's just, I probably had to, but you know what's kind of funny? Because I like some country. I would say country, but I like some country. And I like the Carrie Underwoods and the, who else? No, but I like, you know, I like that type of music, you know, the upbeat with that strong message. And then there's some that it's just like, and you just like, it's like hypnosis. You know, that, I don't know, it doesn't really capture me too much.
Mm-hmm.
I probably have to say that.
No, I hear you, you know, because I'm not into
What is your least favorite genre of music?
Oh, my goodness. Techno. Country, bluegrass. I mean, I can go on and on and on. Like, I really don't like anything too much, you know. I'm into, like, just, like, R&B, you know, classic. Stuff that I could just kind of, like, mellow out to, you know.
Oh,
if someone...
why?
You said, why is that?
No. I was going to say, then I should put this in the Guinness World Book of Records since you like mine, then.
I do like it, and I'm going to be honest with you, I do. You know, it's very seldom that I come across someone that, you know, has, you know, that hip-hop and rap music and that I really, really love. You know, and that's just, like, one out of every, like, 50 submissions I get. You know, it's a rare thing. It's a rare thing, you know, because I just feel like, you know, yeah, it's a nice beat, but I want the words to make sense, too.
Exactly.
You know, and when people send music and it's not something that's, like, you know, out there in the public's eye, which is cool, you know, just don't send me music with pots and pans in the background and maybe I would like it even more. You know what I mean? Like, like have it mixed down better or something and maybe Miss P will love it, you know? Like, do something.
Turn that
fan
down
real
quick.
You know, it's like one of those, like, they started recording it while they was in a shower. Like, you know, they just really felt that moment coming on. So that's what I'm talking about. Like, right. Like, don't do it. Don't do it. Like, you know, everything is not supposed to be on reverb, okay? So that's just how I feel about it. So where can people, like, before I get to that, like, what can we expect in your next upcoming projects? You know, what do you have going on that we can, you know, all look out for?
Well, the good thing about, and obviously I've been doing this for a while, but the good thing about really jumpstarting and really getting out there for people to really kind of see, you know, you have an opportunity to kind of experiment, you know, with different things. And what if I make this type of song? What if I make this type of song? And, you know, as I mentioned to you at the top of the show, you know, something that one of the five words that represents me would be smooth. So, I mean, for me, I don't like anything to really kind of be forced. If I'm yelling too loud, I'm yelling too loud. If I'm too low, I'm too low. I like to be, like, right in between, you know, with enough emotion for you to really kind of, for me to be able to captivate you. So, I mean, I'm real comfortable with the genre of, like, hip-hop and R&B. So you could probably expect more of that in this next project, which is called Progression, because I feel like anything that I do on a day-to-day basis, is about progression. It's the progression of my life, you know, me as an artist. So I definitely I'm working on that. It's probably going to be about four or five songs. It's going to feature the new single that I'm actually promoting that's on iTunes. It's called Lead On. That's something that of course, I'm promoting right now. I'm working on a video with, which should be done in, well, it should be shot at least in the next couple of weeks and out within a month. So I'm working on that. I'm working on my second single to come out. And so I'm kind of just focused on that and just more of the promotion and marketing and doing shows with great people such as yourself. And I'm also performing, I'm starting to do a lot more shows, performing July 13th in Jacksonville. So looking forward to that as well.
Right. That's so awesome. And I'm so proud of you and your strides that you're making. And, you know, like I said, again, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but, you know, your positive your positive outlook and the way you carry yourself. And like you said, I'm smooth. I'm right in the middle, you know. It's like that cool side of the pillow, like Billy D, you know what I mean? How Billy D was always just, like, smooth.
Mm-hmm.
He's always smooth. He's like, Coke 45. Whenever time. And I'll be like, look at Billy. No. But, yeah, definitely. So where can people, you know, follow you, your website, your tweets, your everything?
Sure. Thank you for the free promo.
You're welcome.
Well, you can follow me on Twitter. I need more follow. No, I'm glad. You can follow me on Twitter, smoothrob _B. Then I have a team page as well. If you want to join the movement, join the team. It's teamrob _B. You go on my website, internationalrob-b.com, which is always getting updated with new photos from a photo shoot, videos, and music, and just have some other influential information, you know, just in case we didn't cover it here, you didn't hear it, you can actually look that up. And then you can Google me, and there's some things that do come up as well. I'm pretty happy about that. But, yeah, you can probably go to those sites and find me.
And definitely you're gonna find him. And you know, of course, everyone that comes and show me love on a show, I definitely here and there will, you know, tweet them and say follow, of course, or listen to this or do
oh,
this
great.
Or do that. So that's not like a one-time thing. It's not like come on the show and then let's forget about each other ever existed. Like, that's not how I roll.
That wouldn't be helping each other.
No, exactly. And, you know, and I could become a stalker, you know, and we don't want that. So anyone that knows me knows that I like to stay in tune with people and in touch on some level just to, you know, make sure all is well, one, and then two, to be as helpful as I can when I can with tweeting or retweeting or whatever the case may be. And if there's ever anything that you have going on and you don't have a moment to come on a show at the time that I'm on, you can always let Mag know, or you can hit me up yourself and let me know, and I'll just put it out there in the universe so everyone can know to go and check this out or whatever the case may be. Just like keep me in the loop at all time, because in my mind we're family now, so you know we're gonna stay connected, or I get into stalker mode and that makes no sense.
Well, on that note, I think I'm gonna make an effort to tweet you every day. So speaking of stalker mode, when you see Smooth Rob pop up, it's me.
Oh my so God, I'm so psychotic.
And back to the you didn't think you met your match finding somebody who's goofy, but you have. Secondly, the question that I wanted to ask myself is, and you, I was just actually just waiting to see if you asked it, and so I
wasn't. No, I was gonna hold that up.
Pouch.
I was gonna hold it off and wait, but you got it, so
no,
let's
I'm
hear
good.
It.
Real quick, 2 seconds.
No, take your time.
So Rob B, what separates you from other artists? Okay. Well, thank you for asking that question. I would say, you know, I consider myself as being a role model. I don't want to be just cool, a cool rapper, somebody who looks cool, dresses nice. You know, I'd want to be an advocate, and it actually ties into what my motto is and what my movement stands for, the self-empowerment, in the sense that you can still do whatever you want to do and accomplish your dreams. You know, me, my mom always said, look, Rob, you can do whatever you want to do, just get me a degree. A lot of people, a lot of kids nowadays, they feel like they have to be all in or nothing. You don't have to be. You know, I'm still at a decent age where I can actually still be appealing to the teenagers and be appealing to my age and those, you know, over 30 and over 40. So, you know, if you have the opportunity, you know, go get your degree, you know, accomplish all of what you need to accomplish, you know, not only so you can be more intelligent with dealing with the business, but you can also have a backup, of course. But I just want to be that advocate, that role model, that good story that, hey, kids, you can still go to school, you can still accomplish, you can still play collegiate sports and do whatever you need to do, and music will always be there. So that's what makes me different from everybody else that's doing this right now.
And you know what else makes you different? Because you just, you know, totally went into two characters, like, just spontaneously combusted into two people. And, you know, actually was the interviewer and the interviewee, and no one has ever done that, and I loved it. Every second of it, it kept me so engrossed. I'm telling you, I was just like, wow, listen to him. Let him go, you know. It was totally awesome. I loved it. And I loved having you on the show. And, again, you know, let's stay connected just like we have been and, you know, support each other through all that needs to be supported. I thank you so much for taking the time to, you know, get us all in tune to International Raw B, and I look forward to all that you have to offer the world. You just keep being amazing and doing the things that you do.
Thanks. Hold on. There's a couple of things I want to ask you really quickly.
Sure.
Where are you located?
New York.
All right. New York. Where in New York? You don't mind me asking.
No, I'm actually in Westchester County, so I'm actually outside of the big city, but in the big city, three, you know, all the time.
Okay.
Because that's where everything is happening at.
My mom was born in Brooklyn. I got a lot of family, you know, Flatbush. A lot of family out in New York, and I hear the accent, so that's why I asked. Second,
I don't have
I'm gonna
an
come
accent.
Back. No, you do. You do. Trust me. Trust me. You do. Secondly, I'm going to come back on the show sometime, and I'm going to interview you. I don't have a blog.
Sure.
I don't have a blog talk radio, but I'm going to come back and I'm going to interview you, so I'm going to get my questions ready.
Yeah, get them together.
So we can set that up so I can interview you. So, you know, spend a little time with you telling, your fans more about you. So.
Oh, that would be awesome. I would love it. And, you know, it's so funny about that because Phoenix and I were talking the other day, and I said, you know what, people have asked to interview me, and I have never let anyone interview me, ever.
Oh,
you know,
I
so that would be, yeah, that would be, that would be, yeah, that would be awesome. That would be awesome. We need to, like, all come together on that. Like, have all my favorite people just come on and
yeah,
just,
be awesome.
Just, like, tag team me.
Oh, wow.
The in the windows. But, yeah, on that window, I'm going to jump out of it real quick.
Hold on. Let me call 911 real quick.
Okay, I'm going to jump out of it real quick. Okay. We have Rob Fernandez in the chat room. He said, whoa. And then Maggie says, tag team.
Yeah, Maggie, always on the look.
Maggie, she don't miss a beat, boy. She don't. I swear she doesn't. But that's why I love her, because she's always, like, focused. She's always got her eyes on the prize. Anyway, everyone, I just want to thank you again, Rob, for, you know, coming on and, you know, being such an awesome individual, as everyone sees. And now everyone who's tuned in for the first time and getting to, you know you for the first time, know now that they need to, you know, follow, retweet, gain, get the music, stay in tunes, and, you know, just love you some Ron B / Omarion / all those people that all those women thought he was.
All that.
And all that, and chase him through Atlanta Airport if your legs can take it, because that's a huge airport, and I'm lost every 4 months when I'm there. That's all I need to say. All right, guys, have a good night.
All right,
have a good night, Rob. Thank you so much. Thank you. Bye. Yeah, guys, so that was International Rob B, and he was awesome. I really, really, really enjoyed his interview. Like I said, well-spoken, well-read, educated. You know, he has a lot of positive things that he's putting out there. And you know what? I agree with him. That's what separates him from a lot of people that I've talked to. You know, he's really not about trying to, like, shine, even though he's still shiny. I love it, love it, love it. It's like the subliminals. He knows what he's doing. But anyway, guys, I just want to thank you so much. Every shout out and much love to everybody in the chat room, Maggie Love, Phoenix, of course, and our new friend, Ron Fernandez. If you're tuning in for the first time, I hope it's not your last. And for all those who continue to support the Intern Show and Ms. P, thank you. And I love you bunches. Okay, so make sure you guys get in tune with Steve Ron Payton and also with International Rob B. Show love and continue to support because it is so awesome to uplift and empower. Until tomorrow night, guys, because, yes, Ms. P is on again tomorrow night at 10, and we're going to be talking to Phoenix, and we're going to be talking to Sister Mary Beth, and no, she's not a nun, okay? She's not a nun. So until then, guys, stay in tune with Ms. P. Have a good night, babies.
I'm in tune. I'm in tune. About to take it to the moon. Let's go. I'm in tune.